nightline to each other, you know, and can connect.
Sound of Cinema. Listen now on BBC Sounds.
Elizabeth Olker is here with Unclassified tonight at 11:30 on Radio 3. This evening, there's a tribute to the late, great David Lynch, composed by Michael A. Muller, and you'll get to hear the new single from Tom York and Mark Pritchard, This Conversation Is Missing Your Voice. Before that, at 10 o'clock, Sarah Moore-Peach has the perfect way to end your weekend with Night Tracks. And at 9:30, from the Church of St. Anne and St. Agnes, London, with the Renaissance singers, it's Compline. And now, our drama on three is Rainer Maria Rilke's Duino Elegies, translated by Vita and Edward Sackville-West. Rilke's landmark poetry cycle, exploring the deep mysteries of existence, are performed by Alfred Enoch with German readings by Nenda Neurocherer and original music by Erland Cooper. They are introduced by Leslie Chamberlain.
When Rilke died in 1926, he was a world-famous poet. He died young, aged only 51, and had recently completed a poetic cycle which he had worked on for over 10 years. This was the Duino Elegies. The first English translation came soon after, in 1931. The translators were Vita Sackville-West, at the time best known for her own prize-winning poetry and novels, and her cousin Edward Sackville-West, also a novelist, who would become familiar as a musical authority in the early days of BBC Radio 3. Vita had some German. Edward knew the language well. Together, they managed to tackle one of the greatest poems in the German language and produce a version that was not only pioneering, but captured the deep emotion of Rilke's journey to finding peace with himself, as a poet and as a man. A marvellous addition to their achievement was that they wrote in the blank verse of Shakespeare. There are 10 elegies composed variously over the years 1912 to 1924. Many of the stanzas are concentrated in the mind and heart of the poet, as he wonders about the true nature of life and death, and what it is to be here on earth. Lovers seem to grasp it, but then their insight fades. Tokens of another weightless, infinitely expansive, utterly free existence come to Rilke from birds and stars and angels, angels especially, beside whom we are puppets. Not because someone or something is controlling us, but because we can't know our role in a world which we overinterpret. Some of Rilke's most moving passages are homages to the tranquility of animals. Think here of deep, still eyes, that whatever they see, conceal it from us. The difference between the human and the angelic agitates the poet. He looks for insight into works of art. The fifth elegy keeps pointing at a painting of acrobats by Picasso. What he most wants is an answering cry from the angel to tell him his question has been heard. Written by a non-religious poet, the Duino elegies most remarkably explore the cosmic space that the Christian religion has left behind.
Duino Elegies by Rainer Maria Rilke, translated by Vita Sackville-West and Edward Sackville-West.
Nehme einer mich plötzlich ans Herz, ich verginge von seinem stärkeren Dasein. Denn das Schöne ist nichts als des schrecklichen Anfang, den wir noch gerade ertragen. Und wir bewundern es so, weil es zurückgelassen, verschmäht uns zu zerstören. Ein jeder Engel ist schrecklich.
Who would give ear among the angelic host, were I to cry aloud, and even if one amongst them took me swiftly to his heart, I should dissolve before his strength of being. For beauty is nothing but the birth of terror, which we endure but barely, and enduring, must wonder at it in that it disdains to compass our destruction. Every angel is terrible, and thus in self-control, I crush the appeal that rises with my sobs.
Ach, wen vermögen wir denn zu brauchen?
Of whom, alas, of whom shall we have need?
Engel nicht, Menschen nicht.
Neither of angels nor of men. Already the sagacious animals have found us out. How little at our ease we live and move in this intelligible world. Maybe we keep the image of some tree that hangs above a slope that daily we behold. Or we recall the path of yesterday and our indulgence to the constancy of some dear habit that remained with us, so well contented with our company that it went not away. And night, too. Ah, the night when winds from space ravage our brows, the gently disenchanting, much longed for night. Wearily imminent for lonely hearts, this must remain for all. Is night to lovers kinder? They, alas, do but disguise their fate with one another.
Ist sie den Liebenden leichter? Ach, sie verdecken sich nur miteinander ihr Los.
Have you not learnt that lesson? Cast away emptiness from your arms into the space we breathe. The birds may feel a wider air. Perhaps beneath their spiritual wings. Yes, springtime needed you, and many a star beckoned that you should mark it in the past. A wave was lifted up, a violin, even as you came past the open window, sounded a note, and that was all ordained. Ordained, but did you gain the mastery? Were you not ever wrapped in expectation, even while your beloved did declare all things to you? But where will you bestow her? For strange and powerful thoughts go in and out, even at night, persisting in your mind. But if the spirit moves you, sing of lovers. Famous their passion, but not yet, sufficiently immortalized. Almost you envy lovers who have been deserted, deeming them tenderer by far than those whose love was satisfied. Ever again renew the estimate incalculable. Consider how the hero saves himself, makes even of his downfall an excuse, a pretext for his final resurrection. But nature, spent, takes lovers back again. Back to herself, as were she powerless to fashion thus a second time. Have you thought earnestly about Gaspara Stampa? And thought how any girl who lost her lover, evoking that extravagant example, might cry, I would be even as she was. Shall not these oldest of all griefs at last bear fruit for us? Is it not time that we, who love, should free ourselves from the beloved, and quivering resist, most like the arrow that strives against the bowstring, gathered up, that in its leap it may transcend itself? Nothing which is static.
Ist es nicht Zeit, dass wir liebend uns vom Geliebten befreien und es bebend bestehen? Wie der Pfeil die Sehne besteht um gesammelt im Absprung mehr zu sein als er selbst. Denn bleiben ist nirgends, ist nirgends.
Voices, voices. Listen, my heart, as once the early saints alone knew how to listen when the mighty summons upraised them from the earth, but they, intractable, knelt on and heeded not the call, so ardent was their hearkening. Not that you could endure to hear the voice of God, no, far from that, but hear the drifting, the sempiternal tidings born of silence, speaking from every dead young man to you. Did not the fate of Naples and of Rome speak softly to you in each church you entered? Or some sublime inscription glow for you, as recently the tablet in the church of Santa Maria Formosa? What do they want of me? By slow degrees, I must appraise the semblance of injustice which sometimes hinders, though it be but little, the gesture of the spirit of the dead.
Freilich ist es seltsam, die Erde nicht mehr zu bewohnen, kaum erlernte Gebräuche nicht mehr zu üben.
How strange it is to live no more on earth, to make no further use of customs learnt, no longer to attribute to the rose or anything of fair or special promise, a metaphor of human destiny.
Das, was man war, in unendlich ängstlichen
to be no longer that which once we were, in over-fearful hands, to throw aside even our personal name, a broken toy. Strange to desire no more the consummation of our desires. How strange to see all things related to this earth float free in space. And death's a weariness so overcharged with incompletion that we slowly come to the conception of eternity. Yet all the living fall into the error of oversharp distinction. I have heard that angels may themselves be unaware whether they move amongst the quick or dead. The eternal current sweeps all ages on through both these realms and dominates in both. Those who were called away in early youth have no more need of us. Detachment comes as we outgrow the mother's gentle breast. But we who need great secrets, we to whom sorrow so often means a blessed progress, what should we be without them? Is that legend empty, which tells how once in the lament for Linos through the barren stupor burst music, audacious, new, and space aghast, suddenly and eternally invaded by youth well nigh divine, first trembled to that vibration of the emptiness, which draws us still and comforts us and helps us.
Ist die Sage umsonst, dass einst in der Klage um Linos Wagen der erste Musik dürre Erstarrung durchdrang? Dass erst im erschrockenen Raum, dem ein beinahe göttlicher Jüngling plötzlich für immer entrat, die Leere in jene Schwingung geriet, die uns jetzt hinreißt und tröstet und hilft? Weh mir an, sing ich euch, fast tödliche Vögel der Seele, wissend um euch.
Every angel is redoubtable. Nevertheless, I sing you, woe is me. being conversant with you well-nigh deadly birds of the soul. Ah, where are fled the days of young Tobias, when the most radiant one stood on the simple threshold, slightly masked for travel and no longer terrible? Youth come in search of youth as he looked out, inquisitive. But now, if the archangel, so fraught with danger, strode but one bare pace lower and nearer from behind the stars, the beating of our own heart would destroy us. Who are ye then? From the beginning blessed, spoilt children of creation, mountain ranges, dawn crimson peaks of all creation, ye, pollen of blossoming divinity, links of the daylight, pathways, steps and thrones, infinity within a finite being, shields of delight, the turbulence of stormy, enchanted ecstasy, then suddenly, a solitary mirror that reflects the stream of your own beauty back to your own image.
Frühe Geglückte, ihr Verwöhnten der Schöpfung, Höhenzüge, morgenrötliche Grate aller Erschaffung, Pollen der blühenden Gottheit, Gelenke des Lichtes, Gänge, Treppen, Throne, Räume aus Wesen, Schilde aus Wonne, Tumulte stürmisch entzückten Gefühls und plötzlich einzeln Spiegel, die entströmte eigene Schönheit wiederschöpfen, zurück in das eigene Antlitz.
For we, when feeling overcomes us, dwindle. Alas, we breathe ourselves away. The glow declines from ember unto weaker ember. One or another may well say to us, yes, you are in my blood. This room, this spring is full of you. In vain. He cannot hold us. We melt in him and round him. Who can hold those who are beautiful? Incessantly, some cheating semblance of reality crosses their faces and again departs. As dew from springing grass, as the hot steam from smoking dish, so the intrinsic self exhales itself away. Oh, whither go our smiles? And thou, O contemplation, fresh, genial fount within the heart released. Alas, there's no escape. Does space retain anything of our substance when we're gone? Do the angels truly live and take their being only from their own selves, from that which streamed out from themselves in the beginning? Or is there sometimes, as though by inadvertence, some portion of our essence merged therein? Are we confused within their lineaments in such proportion only as of vague perceptions in the face of pregnant women? They're unaware of it. They, in the whirlwind of their return upon themselves, indeed. How should they be aware?
Liebende könnten, verstünden sie's, in der Nachtluft wunderlich reden. Denn es scheint, dass uns alles verheimlicht.
Lovers most marvelously could descant thereon by night, if they could understand it. For it would seem that all things wrap themselves in secrecy against us. See, the trees exist, the houses stand that shelter us. We only, with a light exchange of greeting, pass all things by, and everything conspires against us to keep silence, half in shame, perhaps, and half in hope unspeakable.
Wir nur ziehen allem vorbei, wie ein luftiger Austausch. Und alles ist einig, uns zu verschweigen, halb als Schande vielleicht, und halb als unsägliche Hoffnung.
Lovers, to you I make appeal, to you who are to one another all-sufficient. You clasping one another, have you proof? See, it has happened to me that my hands grew conscious of each other, that my worn countenance buried in them found protection. That gave me some slight sense of consciousness. Yet who would dare by that to say, I am? But you, who in the other's ecstasy have increase, even till he must beseech no more, so overpowered is he by you. You who grow fruitful as the years of vintage in one another's hands, who abdicate all self at moments for the other takes the mastery, I make appeal to you. You touch each other in such blessedness. I know, because the touch of love restrains, because the star that screens your tenderness is not obscured, because beneath that star you have a sense of pure continuance, and so in your embrace do all but promise to one another immortality. And yet, when you endure the first alarm, and the first glance of longing at the window, and the first walk together through the garden, lovers, are you still lovers then, the same? When you seek one another's lips and drink, alas, how strangely does the act elude the drinker. Have you not been amazed at the discretion with which all human gestures were portrayed in Attic statues? Were not love and parting laid on their shoulders with so light a touch, as though they knew them in a different guise? Recall their hands. They touch without insistence, despite the strength that in the torso sleeps. They, in their mastery of self, were wise. We've traveled far from thence and are condemned so to caress each other, for the gods press heavier on us. Yet this concerns the gods, if but we also might discover some narrow, pure, restrained humanity, some strip of fertile land to make our own between the current and the stones. For our own heart outstrips us, even as theirs did. But we are now no longer capable of rendering it in mitigating image, nor yet in godlike bodies, wherein it finds a nobler moderation.
Fänden auch wir ein reines, verhaltenes, schmales, menschliches, einen unseren Streifen Fruchtlands zwischen Strom und Gestein, denn das eigene Herz übersteigt uns noch immer wie jene, und wir können ihm nicht mehr nachschauen in Bilder, die es besänftigen, noch in göttliche Körper, in denen es größer sich mäßigt.
One thing it is to sing of the beloved, another thing, alas, to celebrate the guilty blood, the hidden river god. She knows him from afar. What knows the youth of that imperious godhead of desire, which when he was alone before his love had tamed the god, oft in his love's despite, reared itself up, all dripping from its own mysterious sea, and summoned up the night to endless challenge. Neptune of the blood, with fearful trident, blows from his dusky breast a wind throughout the spiral twisted shell. Hark how the night scoops out its hollow cave. Is it true, O stars, that youth's desire descends from you to the beloved's face and finds your candid image mirrored there? It was not you, alas, nor yet his mother, who toward expectation arched his brows. It was not you, his lover, secret to him, who bent his lips into a richer bow. Think you that, moving like the wind at dawn, your airy coming would have shaken him? True, you appalled his heart, but older fears rushed in to swell the shock. Call to him. His unlighted pilgrimage still holds him by a thread, for even your cry suffices not to free him quite. He'll make a strong attempt, leap out, and bring to rest his lightened burden in your secret heart, there to collect himself and take his birth. But was this work his own? You, mother, were alone at the inception of him when you gave him his tiniest birth. You it was who molded round his gaze the friendly world, repelled the hostile world. Oh, whither are gone those years in which your form, slender and tall, hid tumid chaos from him? Much did you hide from him thus. In the awful night, you rid his room of fear and from the refuge of your heart took out a comforting breath, filling with human shape his empty night. You set the nightlight too, not in the darkness, but in your nearer presence to him there, a lighted image of your tenderness, nowhere a creaking sound, but you, with a smile, explained it to him as if you had known for years exactly when the floor behaved like that. And so he listened and was quieted. So much could you do when you rose up for him. Behind the cupboard strode his destiny, tall in its mantle, and his restless future slid into the curtain's shifting fold. And he himself, quieted at last, lay still, tasting the sweetness of approaching sleep. He seemed as if protected, but within, who could arrest the floods of heritage? Ah, there was no precaution in that sleeper. He slept but in the fever of a dream and opened out the floodgates to himself. Young and shy, he was caught up and ensnared, already twisted into pattern by the forward-creeping tendrils of his blood, to writhing growth, wild animal-leaping shapes. So he gave in. He loved his soul, loved that unruly jungle of himself, precipitate wilderness, on which his heart, like a green light, reposed. So he forsook his soul, tearing himself up by the roots with stark primeval leap out of a tiny birth by then outgrown. With love, he climbed down into the ancient blood, into the gorges where the terror lay, still surfeited with father's blood. Each horror knew him, nodded, and seemed to understand. Yea, even she he dreaded smiled at him. Seldom, O mother, did you smile so tenderly. How should he find it in his heart to spurn the smile he loved before yourself? For when you carried him within you in the womb, it was already there, dissolved out in the liquid element that gently bears the growing child. For we are not like the flowers, whose love is rounded by a single year.
Sehe, wir lieben nicht wie die Blumen aus einem einzigen Jahr.
Our love makes strength undreamed of rise like sap into our arms. O daughter, mark this well. We love not the one single future child, but those within us, seething, numberless, the fathers like the ruins of a mountain, resting in the deeps of us, the dry riverbed of former mothers, the whole mute landscape. Under a cloudy or clear-skied destiny. All these, O daughter, came before yourself. And you, indeed, what do you know? You beckoned past ages up in him you loved. What feelings writhed up from his nature's transformation? What vengeful ghosts of women, what obscure figures of men did you rouse in his youthful veins? Dead children stretched their hands to you, imploring. softly, very softly, do a deed of love for him, a day's work that will last. Lead him up near the garden, yield to him each night's transcendency. And cherish him.
Oh, leise, leise, tu ein liebes vor ihm, ein verlässliches Tagwerk. Führ ihn nahe an den Garten heran. Gib ihm der Nächte Übergewicht. Verhalt ihn. O Bäume Lebens, o Wann winterlich, wir sind nicht einig, sind nicht wie die Zugvögel verständigt, überholt und spät, so drängen wir uns plötzlich Winden auf und fallen ein auf teilnahmslosen Teich. Blühen und verdorren ist uns zugleich bewusst. Und irgendwo gehen Löwen noch und wissen, solange sie herrlich sind, von keiner Ohnmacht.
O Trees of Life, when do you turn to winter? We are not in agreement. We are not initiated as migrating birds, but overtaken and belated, throng precipitately on the winds and fall into a lake that's callous to our fate. We are acquainted both with blossoming and with decay, see both in the same hour. And somewhere still the lions go to and fro, knowing no weakness while their splendor lasts. But we, when we're most firm in our intention, already are aware of some new impulse. Hostility is ever nearest to us. Lovers who gave each other mutual promise of liberty, the chase, and home do ever o'erstep the margin, then a moment's flash prepares a cause for weary dissonance. As we observed, for man is very patent to us. We do not know the shape of feeling, only what outwardly determines it.
Wer saß nicht bang vor seines Herzens Vorhang?
Who has not sat in fear before the curtain of his own heart? It rose. The scene was set for some leave-taking. That is easily intelligible. The familiar garden that gently swayed, then only came the dancer. Not he. Enough. However delicate his mime may be, still he is in disguise, and turns into a simple householder who goes into his dwelling through the kitchen. I will not tolerate these half-filled masks. Give me the genuine puppet, That's complete. I will accept the wire, the parchment skin, and mumming faces. Here I sit in front, and even if the lights go out, and even if they should say to me that all is over, and even if the stage itself were empty, blowing a grey draught hither, and even if no silent ancestor of mine still sat beside me there, no woman, not so much as the squinting brown-eyed boy, nevertheless, I should remain. There's always some spectacle to look at. Am I not right? You, who on my account tasted so bitterly of life, my father, who paid the price for the first troubled flow of my necessities as I grew up, who with the tang of so obscure a future preoccupied my dim and upward gaze, tested my father, you whose fear in me I felt in all my hopes since you are dead, and offered up for my small share of fate your treasure of serenity, such treasure of quietude as you, the dead, possess. Am I not right? And you, am I not right? You who once loved me for the embryo of love in me, but whom I did forsake because the hint of space which I discerned within your countenances when I loved you was blotted out for me by cosmic space in which you had no part. I am inclined to sit before the puppet show, nay, more, to watch in such absorption that to balance my staring eyes, an angel must come down as player and raise up the parchment skins.
Engel und Puppe, dann ist endlich Schauspiel. Dann kommt zusammen, was wir immerfort entzweien, indem wir da sind.
Angel and puppet, there's a show at last. Then meet the elements which we divide by our mere presence. Then for the first time in all our many years appears the outline of the whole journey. Then the angel plays above us in that hour. Ah, do the dying surmise what depths of make-believe are latent in all our doings here below? Not everything is what it seems to be. Oh, hours of childhood, when more than the mere past was hid behind the figures that we saw, and yet before us we saw no future. True, we grew towards manhood, and often wished impatiently to be grown up ourselves, half for the sake of those with nothing left them but maturity. Yet as we walked our solitary ways, we were contented with our permanence, inhabiting the gap that lies between the toy and the wide world from the beginning, a place created for a pure event.
Wer zeigt ein Kind, so wie es steht? Wer stellt es ins Gestirn und gibt das Maß des Abstands ihm in die Hand?
Who shows a child the way that it may stand? Who places it among the stars and gives into its hands the measure of proportion? Who molds the shape of deaths of little children in grey bread that will harden, or leaves it in the child's round mouth as 'twere a lovely apple's core? Now, murderers are clear as noonday, but to entertain so easily the thought of death, of total death, or ever life began, and yet to entertain no bitterness. That's indescribable.
Aber dies, den Tod, den ganzen Tod, noch vor dem Leben so sanft zu enthalten und nicht böse zu sein, ist unbeschreiblich.
Thank you.
Tell me, who are these itinerants? These fugitives, more hasty than ourselves, urgently driven from the start. By whom? To gratify what discontented will? Not only does he drive them, bend them, twist them, winnow them, throw them up and catch them back, but they float down as out of slippery and greasy air onto their little carpet, worn thin and threadbare by their ceaseless leap upwards, that little mat forlorn in the great universe, laid like a paving stone as if the suburb of heaven in that spot had hurt the earth, and scarce arrived there, upright there, and shown the great initial letter of existence, then without respite the returning grasp twirls them again in play, the strongest men. Much as Augustus called the strong would bend a pewter plate upon the dinner table. Alas, around this center blooms the rose of the performance and its petals drop. Around this ramrod, round this pistol, met by its own pollen, fruiting with the fruit illusory of a disinclination not realized by them and glittering with a most thin veneer of glib reluctance, smiling with false smiles. There the strong man of yore, now wrinkled, withered, the old man, only fit to beat the drum these days, within his mighty skin, so shrunken that you might think it had contained two men once, and that one of them already lay out in the churchyard, and that he survived him. Deaf, and sometimes within his widowed skin, slightly confused. But he, the young man, who might be the son of Herculean shoulders and a nun, limber and strapping, is compact of sinew and simplicity. Oh, you, oh, both of you, who to some sorrow, once as a toy were handed over, that sorrow being yet a little one, in one of many lingering convalescences. And you, who striking the earth unripe as only fruits strike the earth, 100 times a day, dropping from off the tree that reared itself in the cooperative exercise, swifter than water passing through its spring, summer and autumn in a few short minutes, so do you drop and bound within the grave. And sometimes in a moment's breathing space, of a beloved face you catch a glimpse beyond that mother who's so seldom kind to you, yet for your slender, wasting body, that face must be forgotten, shy and but half explored. And once again the leader claps his hands for a fresh leap, and ere a separate pain can grow distinct near to your thumping heart, the scorching of your souls returns and drives swift tears of physical pain into your eyes, and notwithstanding, the random smile. Take it, O angel, pluck the bloodless herb of healing, put it in a vase, protect it. Place it beneath that vase of other pleasures, not open yet to us, in a lovely urn. Place it and write this superscription round, florid and rollicking. Subricio saltat. And you too then, darling, you over whom the most delightful joys caper but leave you mute. Perhaps your flounces are happy for your sake. Perhaps the green metallic silk across your young proud breasts thinks itself favoured inexpressibly, with nothing left to wish for, you laid out in different ways like fruit in marketplaces. The balanced fruit of equanimity, you on the equipoised and trembling scales, naked below your shoulders. Where, oh, where is the place? I bear it in my heart, where for so long they failed to find their skill, dropping away from one another like animals that wrongly paired o'erleap each other, where the weights are heavy still, where still between their vainly whirling staves the platters reel. And suddenly, in this laborious void, this empty maximum, the indescribable place veers round, where the pure minimum incomprehensibly transforms itself, and where the computation's many units increase without an end. Oh, city squares. Oh, square in Paris, that eternal stage where the milliner Madame Lamar wreathes, winds the restless pathways of the earth, inventing out of them those endless ribbons, new bows and ruches, flowers and cockades, artistic fruits, all fraudulently dyed for the cheap winter hats of destiny. Oh, angel, if there were a place unknown to us, if lovers there upon a carpet that cannot be described, such lovers as never found attainment here displayed their high, intrepid rendering of the heart's pendulum, their towers of joy, their ladders trembling, propped on one another alone, where ground was never long ago. If they could do this thing before the audience, in circles of the silent, countless dead, would they then throw their coins of happiness? Their final coins, held ever in reserve and ever hidden, unrevealed to us, valid eternally before the couple that smiled with an unfeigned smile at last. Upon the carpet come at last to rest. Long is it now since I was made aware how you, O fig tree, in despite of flower, thrust your pure mystery home into the fruit, which takes its final shape in early bud before maturity has reaped its praise. A fountain's throat, your bended branch drives up against the stream of sap, and out of sleep, leaping with consciousness not yet awake, enters the bliss of its most grateful act. Thus did the god take on his swan-like form. But we, alas, linger. Our blossoms flatter us until at length we drive ourselves betrayed into the core, sullen and long delayed, of our fruit itself. The throng of action urges but a few, so strongly that they hesitate and wait to glow in their heart's fullness when desire of flowering, mild breath of fragrant night, touches their eyelids and their youthful lips. Heroes, perhaps, and those whom fastidious death has chosen early, distorting otherwise their convoluted veins, these hasten past in front of their own smile, as that proud team of horses runs before the vanquisher in Karnak's shallow anaglyph. And he, the hero, marvelously near to the youthful dead, is not concerned to stay. Existence is for him the ascent. He wonders continually away to move among his ceaseless danger's varied constellation. There few may find him but in sudden joy. Fate, who to us is silent and obscure, sweeps him away with her impassioned song into the mounting storm rush of her world. I shall hear none like him. His darkened note pierces my body in the streaming air. Then how fain would I hide myself from longing. Might I once more take on my boyish form, seated and leaning in the future's arms, and read of Samson, how his mother's womb first gave birth to nothing, then to all.
Begann nicht dort schon in dir seine herrische Auswahl?
Was he not hero even in the body of you, his mother? Was it not even there? In you he entered on his lordly choice. Myriad were they who surged within your womb, and would be he, but lo, he seized the chance. Broke from within your body, chose and prevailed. When he laid low the pillars, he found escape from out your body to a narrower world. There to achieve an ampler victory.
O Mütter der Helden, o Ursprung reißender Ströme.
O mothers of heroes, source of rapid streams, you cloven gorges into which, lamenting, daughters the future sacrifice to your son from the heart's edge on high have thrown themselves. He rested not in stations of his love, but hastened stormily through all, each one, each beat of the heart, secret to him alone, lifted him out and on until at last, so soon averted from the world he knew, he came to a standstill at the long smile's end. Transformed.
Denn hin stürmte der Held durch Aufenthalte der Liebe. Jeder hob ihn hinaus. Jeder ihn meinende Herzschlag abgewendet schon, stand er am Ende der Lächeln. Anders. Werbung nicht mehr. Nicht Werbung. Entwachsene Stimme sei deines Schreies Natur. Zwar schriest du rein wie der Vogel.
May this outgrown voice no more be tainted with the note of supplication, though your cry take to itself the purity of a bird's. And the ascending year so lifts it up, forgetting that it is a busy bird, and not alone a free and single heart. Forgetting that, it wafts it up on high into the joy of inmost paradise. No less than this would you surely supplicate, that your beloved, silent, in whom an answer slowly awakes and sucks the listener's warmth, should seek you out while yet invisible and gather fire at your emboldenment.
Oh, und der Frühling begriffe. Da ist keine Stelle, die nicht trüge den Ton der Verkündigung.
Oh, let the spring grasp this. Each spot would sing annunciation, first a tiny cry, questioning. A candid affirmative day soon wraps it round with its increasing quiet. Then come the steps, steps of your calling voice up to the dreamed-of temple of the future. Next, the quavering fountain, in which the falling drop takes precedence of the spurting beam in promissory play. Then, at last, the summer.
Nicht nur die Morgen alle des Sommers, nicht nur wie sie sich wandeln in Tag und strahlen vor Anfang, nicht nur die Tage, die zart sind um Blumen und oben um die gestalteten Bäume stark und gewaltig, nicht nur die Andacht dieser entfalteten Kräfte, nicht nur die Wege, nicht nur die Wiesen im Abend, nicht nur nach spätem Gewitter das atmende Klarsein, nicht nur der nahende Schlaf und ein Ahnen.
Not only the mornings, everyone, of summer, as they wander in the light of day and blaze before their own beginning. Not only the days which are tender to the flowers, giving hard and sturdy form to the trees above. Not only the awe of these unfolded powers, nor the roads, nor the fields at evening, nor after the late storm, the clear-breathing sky, nor the approach of sleep and the prescience that comes at eventide, but the nights as well. The tall nights of summer and the stars of earth. Once dead, to know the immortality of all the stars for how they do forget.
Denn wie sie vergessen.
See, I call the beloved, but not she alone would come. Girls risen from shallow graves would stand before me. For why should I limit my cry of invocation? The buried are ever seeking still more room. You, children, a thing once grasped from those around us, would suffice for many. Do not think that fate means more than the thick wilderness of childhood. How often did you overtake your love, breathless after a happy, goalless race in the open air? Magnificent is life.
Hier sein ist Herr.
Even you knew this, who seem to have denied yourselves and sunk down in the city's slums, festering and opening onto the abyss. For each man was, for an hour, perhaps not quite, a moment scarcely measurable between two spans, since the hour itself existed wholly, its veins distended by its life. But we forget so easily what our neighbor laughingly fails to confirm or envy us. Let us lift it into sight, where happiness most visible first lets us see itself, when we change it inwardly. For, oh my love, the world is nowhere but within. Our life changes ever as it drifts on and on. Externals fade and fade. Where there was once an enduring house, an image suggests itself across our minds, made out of thought alone, as if it would stand wholly in the mind. The spirit of time creates more stores of strength, formless as the elastic urge which it forces from everything. It knows no temple. We save up secretly this waste of heart. Yes, where one single thing weathers the storm, a thing entreated, served, and reverenced, it preserves itself into the invisible, just as it is. Many perceive it no more. But without this advantage, now they build it up with pillars and statues larger in themselves. Every such dull revulsion of the world has just such disinherited, to whom neither the first nor yet the next belongs. For even the next is far for men to reach. This should not confuse us. It should strengthen in us the custody of the form we still can recognize. Once it stood among men, in the very midst of a destroying fate, in the midst of hesitation whither to go, and as if it existed, bent the stars out of safe skies to itself, to you, O angel. Can I still show it, where it stands, preserved after all in your gaze, at last upright? columns, pylons, the Sphinx, the rigid prop of the cathedral dome that stretched up grey out of a vanishing or foreign city. Was it not a marvel? Wonder at it, O angel, for this was we. Tell, thou great one, that we could do so much, for all my breath suffices not for so great acclamation. Thus have we, after all, not missed those spaces. Permissive enclaves that belong to us. How vast they needs must be, not to have been o'erbrimmed by centuries of human feeling. But a tower was tall, was it not? Surely it was. Even beside an angel, Chartres was tall. And music stretched yet further up beyond us. And were it only a woman in love alone, quite alone at the window at night, did she not come up to your knee? Fear not that I am invoking you, even if it were so. O angel, you do not come, for half my cry is an arm stretched out to keep you at its length. You cannot stride against this solid stream. Up at the top of the arm, an open hand, ungraspable, high up, stands in your way to warn and ward you off. Dumb creatures gaze with their whole vision out into infinity. Our eyes alone would seem to be inverted and like snares set all around them, compassing their free passage. What lies beyond for us is only intelligible through the mask of beasts. For in his early years we take the child, turn him about, and so compelling him, make him look backwards at all confirmation, not over space that in the glance of beasts dwells so profound, exempt from thought of death. That seen by us alone, the freeborn beast keeps his perdition evermore behind him, and God before him. Where he goes into eternity like springs of water. But never for a single day have we clear space before us, space wherein the flowers spring endlessly, the world and still the world. Never a nowhere, blank without negation, pure space, surveillance free, in which to breathe, to know most inwardly and not to covet. It so may come about that one in childhood may lose himself in such a quietude, and grow confused, or yet another die, becoming one with it, for nearing death. We look on death no longer, but gaze out, maybe with the wide stare of animals. But for their fellow hindering their sight, lovers come near thereto and are amazed. It opens out as if by inadvertence behind the other, but beyond the other, neither can travel and the world returns. We are forever turned towards creation, and in creation only can we see the mirrored face of freedom, dark, obscured. or when an animal, dumb brute, looks up and placidly looks through us, through and through. This is the meaning of our lot, to stand opposite, nothing more, forever opposite. If but some comprehension of our kind were in the untroubled animal that comes towards us from his opposite direction, then would he draw us round upon his course. But his own state of being is eternal. For him, uncomprehended and regardless of his condition, clear as is his glance. And where we see futurity, he sees everything and himself in everything, forever sanctified. And yet there is, within the watchful and warm-blooded beast, the weight and care of a great melancholy. For that which often overwhelms us cleaves also to him, remembrance. As though that end towards which we strive had once been nearer and more true, and its fulfillment unutterably sweet. Here everything runs counter, there it was the breath of life. For after his first home, his second home appears to him ambiguous and doubtful.
O Seligkeit der kleinen Kreatur, die immer bleibt im Schoße, der sie austrug. O Glück der Mücke, die noch innen hüpft, selbst wenn sie Hochzeit hat, denn Schoß ist alles.
Oh, the beatitude of tiny creatures that stay forever in the womb that bore them. Happiness of the gnat that inwardly hops even in its nuptials for the womb's supreme. And see the half-security of the bird, from his origin half acquaint with both, as though he were the soul of an Etruscan fled out of a dead man, become aware of space around him, even while the lid of the quiescent image covered him. And he's as one perplexed, who from the womb emerged and now must fly, as though in fear of his own self he flashes through the air, as a crack travels round a cup, so speeds the bat across the porcelain of dusk. And we, onlookers, always, everywhere, turned towards all things, never gazing out. We're cloyed and satiated by it all. We set in order, and it perishes. Order again, and we ourselves do perish. Who turned us then around in such a wise that we are always in that attitude, do what we may, of one who takes his leave? As one on the last hill from which he sees his veil outspread once more, turns, stops, and lingers. So do we live and ever bid farewell. To begin with, then, to past the respite of being. Why must we put on humanity? Like a laurel crown, almost the darkest green of all, with tiny waves on each leaf's edge. Like a smile of the wind, humanity. And fleeing from fate, yearn after it. For sure, not because happiness exists, that hasty profit which betokens a near loss. Not out of curiosity, nor yet to realize the uses of the heart. That too would take place in the myrtle crown. But rather since it means much to be here. And because all about us, transient indeed, and seldom our concern, does seem to need us, the most transient of all. Each thing is only once, once and no more. We also only once, no more. But this, to have been of earth, seems not to be withdrawn.
Einmal, jedes, nur einmal. Einmal und nicht mehr. Und wir auch einmal, nie wieder. Aber dieses einmal gewesen zu sein, wenn auch nur einmal, irdisch gewesen zu sein, scheint nicht widerrufbar.
And so we hasten to perform this trial, wishing to hold it in our feckless hands and in a look more overbrimming still, and in the speechless heart. We wish to become it. To whom then shall we give it? Best would be to keep it all forever. But oh, alas, how much can one take over into the second mode? Not that vision which we have learnt so slowly on the earth. And nothing which has happened here. Pain, then, and before all things, heaviness of heart, the long discovery of love, in fine, everything inexpressible, but how will it be later among the stars, for they are better inexpressible. Even so, the traveller brings from off the steep knife edge of the mountain not a handful of the earth, inexpressible by all, but the yellow and blue gentian, a word acquired and pure. Perhaps we are here to say, house, bridge, brook, gate, jug, fruit tree, window, at most, pillar, tower. But this, mark well, is indeed to speak of things as they themselves have never meant to be. Is not this silent earth cunning to urge lovers so that each and everything be wrapped away in their own ecstasy? Though they be only two in a ceaseless stream, what is it for two lovers to wear away a piece of the older threshold of their door? Easy enough.
Hier ist des sieglichen Zeit, hier seine Heimat. Sprich und bekenn. Mehr als je fallen die Dinge dahin, die erlebbaren. Denn was sie verdringend ersetzt, ist ein Tun ohne Bild. Tun unter Krusten, die willig zerspringen, sobald innen das Handeln entwächst und sich anders begrenzt.
Now is the time for what can be expressed, and here it's home. Speak it and recognize. More than ever do mere things fall past, since they can be experienced, for what displaces them to set it in their room is an imageless act, an act under a crust, which cracks at once when the energy within grows out and takes on other frontiers. Our heart persists between twin rows of hammers as the tongue between the teeth. But yet it is the tongue which does the praising. Let the world, not that which cannot be expressed, praise the angel to whom you cannot boast that you have felt as finely as may be. in the universe, where is his range of feeling? You are an upstart, therefore show to him something simple, formed from race to race, which lives as our chattel, close to our hands and sight. Tell him of things, he will pause in wonderment. Tell him how you stood with the rope maker in Rome, or with the potter by the Nile. Show him how happy a mere thing can be. How innocent, how thoroughly our own, how even a passionate lament can take upon itself a body and serve as a thing or die as one, and calmly glide out beyond the violin its body. These understand from death of living things that you should celebrate them. In themselves, transient, they trust us, the most transient of all, to be their rescuers. This let us do. We must wrap them quite up in our hearts, there to remain unseen, ever within us, whoever we may be at the long last.
Erde, ist es nicht dies, was du willst? Unsichtbar in uns erstehen? Ist es dein Traum nicht, einmal unsichtbar zu sein? Erde, unsichtbar. Was, wenn Verwandlung nicht? Ist ein drängender Auftrag. Erde, du Liebe, ich will.
Is it not this, O Earth, which you desire? To arise unseen within us, is it not your dream for once to be invisible? If change is not, then what your urgent task? Beloved Earth, I wish it to. Believe me when I say I needed not another of your springs to win my confidence. A single one is too strong for my blood. I was converted utterly to you from long ago. You were ever in the right and did invent companionable death, blessed inspiration. See, I live, but whither comes my life? For childhood and the future will not give place to one another. Being. Too rich for number, overflows my heart.
Siehe, ich lebe. Worauf? Weder Kindheit noch Zukunft werden weniger. Überzähliges Dasein entspringt mir im Herzen.
May I, one day, at the end of the somber judgment, sing of rejoicing and fame in chorus with angels. Let not a loose, unsure, or snapping string fail the clear-sounding hammers of my heart. Let my streaming eyes lend brilliance to my face. Let my homely weeping blossom dear to me. Then will you be knights that I have grieved for. How sad is it that, kneeling to receive you, disconsolate sisters, I achieved it not, nor lost myself in your unloosened hair. We are the squanderers of pain and sorrow, espying them in the tragic lapse of time before they come, in case their end be near. For they are our winter's leaves, a dark green shade which colours all our senses. They are one of the seasons of the secretive year and more. They are place and dwelling, camp and ground and home. But then, of course, alas, how strange to us the alleys of the city of pain, in which, in the false silence made from overtones, the gilt noise monument spurts bravely up, burst from the hollowed mould of emptiness. How trackless might an angel trample down that city's market of comfort, bounded by the church she bought, neat, ready-made and clean, shut up and disappointed, looking like a post office on Sunday. But outside curl the edges of the fair, swings of freedom, divers and jugglers of zeal, and the metaphorical shooting range of tinseled luck, where they fidget and set up a forced metallic chorus of applause when one who is more skillful hits the mark. Thus he reels on from applause to hazard, for booths of every curiosity claim him, roll drums and cry up their wares. But elder ones especially may see how gold organically feeds itself, not only for the pleasure of it, but the sex of money, the whole of it, the fact, which educates and carries on the game. Then, just out there, behind the final fence, stuck over with the placards of the deathless, that bitter beer which tastes sweet to the drinkers if only they eat fresh distractions with it, behind that board appears the truly real. Children play and lovers embrace apart, seriously, in the thin grass, and dogs do what they will. Still further is the youth drawn on. Perhaps he loves a young lament. Following her, he comes into the meadows. She says, "It is far. We live right out there." Where? But the youth still follows her. Her look moves him, her shoulder and her throat, perhaps. She comes of a great race, then he leaves her, turns him once more away and waves to her. Why? She is a plaint.
Sie ist eine Klage.
Only those who die young in the first mode of their timeless peace follow, loving her who weans them from it. Girls she awaits and befriends and shows to them quietly what she carries, pearls of grief, suffering's delicately woven veil. With youths she walks in silence. Over there, in the valley where they live, an elder plaint takes an interest in the youth and says, when he asks her, "We were a great race once. We plaints. Our fathers worked the mine up there. In the great mountain, often still you may find among men a piece of original pain. Cut and polished ore from dead volcano, the petrified dross of anger. Yes, that came from over there. Once we were rich indeed." And she leads him gently through the wide landscape of the laments and shows to him the temple pillars or the ruins of that fortress from which the chieftains of the sorrow race once ruled the country. She shows him the tall tear trees and the fields where the flowers of sadness blow. The living only know them as softest leafage. She points out the animals of mourning as they browse. And often a bird in sudden fright flies straight across their upward vision, drawing far the image of its isolated cry. As evening approaches, she takes him to the cromlechs of the ancients, of the sorrow race, the sibyls and the prophets. Then night comes on. They go more silently. And soon the tombstone climbs up like a moon to watch o'er all, brother to him of the Nile, this awful sphinx, a face on the silent room. And they are amazed at the crown-worthy head, which soundlessly once and for all has laid the face of man on the balance of the stars. Giddy with the approach of death, his glance perceives it not, but hers from beyond the bar of the god's home affrights the owl, and it, streaking down that ripely rounded cheek in a slow curve, all soft designs, in the new audience of the dead, on double opened page, the indescribable line. Higher up are the new stars of the land of sorrow. Slowly she tells him their name. Look, here see the rider and the staff. They call the whole starscape the wreath of fruit. Further off, towards the pole, are the balance and the way, the burning book, the window, and the doll. But in the heavens away to the south, pure as in the center of a blessed hand, shines the bright M, which signifies the mothers.
Hier siehe den Reiter, den Stab, und das vollere Sternbild nennen sie Fruchtkreis. Dann weiter dem Pol zu, Wiege, Weg, das brennende Buch, Puppe, Fenster. Aber im südlichen Himmel, rein wie im Innern einer gesegneten Hand, das klar erglänzende M.
But dead men must away, and silently the elder plaint leads him towards the gorge where the spring of joy glimmers under the moon. In awe she names it, and says on earth it is a stream that bears. At the mountain's foot they pause, and there she takes him in her arms and weeps. Once more alone, he climbs away into the mountain of original pain. Nor once does his footstep sound from out that toneless fate. But the irrevocable dead awoke for us a symbol. See, they have pointed out to us the catkins on the naked hazel, or shown us in the rain, which falls on dark earth in the early year.
Und wir, die an steigendes Glück denken, empfänden die Rührung, die uns beinahe bestürzt, wenn ein glückliches fällt.
And we, who think always of a happiness ascending, would be by our emotion quite undone if one should fall.
Duino Elegies was performed by Alfred Enoch, with additional readings in German by Nanda Neurohrer. The original music was composed by Erland Cooper, and the director was Nadia Molinari. Duino Elegies was written by Rainer Maria Rilke and translated by Vita Sackville-West and Edward Sackville-West. It was a BBC Studios audio production for Radio 3.
On BBC iPlayer.
This little guy, a burrowing owl, lives right in the middle of suburbia. hoping to find a mate. Single owl, not too tall, would like to meet female for a lifetime of happiness.
Explore the wildlife and spectacular natural beauty of the Americas.
It's an epic journey.
Narrated by Tom Hanks.
It's up close, it is shocking, and it's beautiful.
The Americas. Watch on BBC iPlayer.
It's 9:30 and time now on Radio 3 and BBC Sounds for the evening office of Compline, a little earlier than in some listings. The service takes the form of a sequence of words and music, which provides a moment of stillness and reflection at the end of the day. For this third Sunday in the liturgical season of Lent, the period of contemplation and fasting for Christians in preparation for Easter, the office comes from the Church of St Anne and St Agnes, Gresham Street in London, with the Renaissance singers. The service begins now with an introit by William Byrd, Miserere mihi Domine. Have mercy upon me, O Lord, and hearken unto my prayer.